Like there's always this like soft skill side that the human element will be needed, I think, in forecasting. And that's going to be very hard for AI to do beyond trending stuff out off of just, you know, if you have a very routine business and it's just plug and chug away, yes, you'll be able to use that. Yeah. On the other side, though, we'll always need that human interpretation. And I think FP&A people who leverage AI tools and they can add in that element of that knowledge that they know, those are the people who are going to be most successful, and they'll feel like they have superpowers going into the upcoming years here.
And if you want to get caught in the trap, then fine, you know. And if your company is fine with you getting caught in the trap, then, you know, fill your boots, you know, build your financial models for everyone today. But, you know, I guess we're moving into that impact territory. And one thing that I add to that, you said, you know, think about what other people in the business are going to need to understand, you know, first, and it's not necessarily a mistake, it's just a thought that doesn't often occur to people, is actually asking the question. And I find this, I still struggle with this, is I try and guess. I try and hypothesize. I try and position myself in somebody else's shoes to say, how would this be useful? But in fact, the quicker way to do it is just to ask them, you know. And it comes back to, there's no such thing as a silly question. People will just like the fact that you asked them and took their opinion. And, you know, some of the best times in my professional career working with finance teams is when I've had somebody in finance approach me without prompting and saying, I've pulled this out for you. It might be interesting. Is it useful? Yeah. And it's literally like three lines in an email, but it meant a huge amount because they then became the go-to guy for this sort of stuff. Obviously, they're building their influence in sort of, you know, sneaking that. It almost feels like insider knowledge, right? Because a lot of people just don't know what's going on inside a finance team, right? So anything that you can do to form that relationship, bridge that gap, ask those questions, I think is a good move.
Yeah, and this ties to another thing that I think is really great for FP&A people, is you don't need to know all the answers. Mm. So many times people will over report things because they're like, hey, here's this massive thing. I think there is an answer in this massive thing that I built for you somewhere. You just got to find this needle in the haystack. But the other big word of advice I have for folks, if you want to be really successful on the finance side, is and this works both in-house as well as like a lot of times we work with fractional CFOs and fractional controllers at accounting firms too. Is when you're talking to that person on the other side of the table, or if it's a client that you have, step number one is I love to just ask people, like, what are your goals, business or for your function? And then I just leave like this long, awkward, dead air, like to the clients are uncomfortable, and then wait for them to talk. And the things that will come out from that really quickly, you'll find out, you know, because there's a zillion things you can do on the finance side. But you'll find, like, what is that one thing that person is most cares about?
Yeah.
And the moment you get that, you go, all right, now let's double click on that. Let's unpack this a little bit more. And now that next FP&A conversation is tracking to those goals that person wanted to have. That's the exhilarating thing. Like, when you're running towards something, that feels like you're moving with purpose. Mm. Yeah, and that's empowering, that's exhilarating. And like, that's the kind of feeling that then also that person sitting across the table from you will feel too, as you're tracking, you know, towards that side.
And again, you need to continue to reiterate, because and it's around about that time of year, you know, early on in 2024. So, you know, we come back from the festive break, you know, with energy and, you know, oh yeah, we're going to get some stuff done this year. But then we get stuck in the weeds, and that rhythm that you mentioned earlier, whether it's month end, whether it's a weekly check-in or whatever, starts to dull a little bit, you know, and I think it's always good practice to always set an outcome from a meeting, yeah, i.e. we are meeting to ensure that we are achieving X, as opposed to just have a review reports, for example. Yeah. But as soon as you do have those goals, just don't lose track of them, because every conversation needs to make sure that it's a little bit closer to that and a little bit closer to that. And it's often lost. So yeah, for everybody going into 2024, don't lose that, you know, that drive, I guess, is the takeaway here, right?
Yeah, you got to set that momentum and the cadence for the team, and you can be like the drummer for the whole company as you're doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and it's fine if you don't want to speak about this because I think everybody's a bit fatigued, but everybody does like hearing perspectives on the whole AI stuff that's going on, right? You know, and I'm sure you kept up to speed, obviously, developing a software platform. But obviously, more and more people now are trying to use AI themselves for planning, you know, using algorithms to try and make predictions and all of that sort of stuff. Now, it was pretty tricky, you know, the year before last, because generative AI, as an example, you know, it was good at producing text and maybe some of the more creative wordy type stuff, but it was really bad with numbers until, of course, the data analysis came along, and now you can generate Python code and you can ask it to, you know, use a forecast algorithm, and you can drop it into Google and all of that sort of stuff. But this, I mean, from a forecasting perspective, is not new. The algorithms have been established for quite a while, right? So what's your perspective on AI augmenting these tools? Is it enabling you, when you guys build your solutions, to do more than you're able to previously? Or are we still working with the same algorithms, just speeding up workflow, for example?
I think there's several layers to unpack on the AI side. Mm. You're completely right. Like if you ask ChatGPT to do some math for you, it's going to be hit or miss for simple arithmetic. Mm. But it'll give you an answer that gives you numbers and they'll look like they're right. But if you actually redo the math, it's going to be wrong often. Mm. You know, and I think, you know, we've been leveraging a lot of ML and, you know, and I'd call it the early bits of AI within our platform too, for being able to do the analysis on the build side of the forecast. So there's the algorithmic builds. Then there's, you know, can you unpack those drivers though, and the multiple steps? I think AI still has some work to do on unpacking the different multiple steps to get there. But anyone can run a algorithmic forecast on that. We have that in our platform with the auto forecast that you can come in a minute, connect all your data. We can cross correlate it all and then adjust for seasonality and the different curves. And boom, in a few minutes, you've got that. And then you go in and you unpack the different drivers. Mm-hmm. We're actively working on, you know, building our own as well to be able to do that next layer. And I think no one's cracked that code yet. But once they do, that's what's going to revolutionize this field. And it's going to happen pretty soon. I'm really excited for what's coming from this. Mm.
It is exciting. And so just to give a little bit of an example recently. So, and it's only using very basic data, right? To try and do a very basic sales forecast. But if you ask ChatGPT to produce code for you to forecast for something, it says, oh yeah, just use the profit, you know, or whatever it happens to be. It used to be Facebook profit, I think, but I don't think it works in the latest version of Python. Again, I don't know. I just know that it took me a ton of time to actually get the right code to be able to do it, right? So, but, you know, I don't know anything about profit. You know, it's just saying that this is what we'd recommend that you use to achieve this forecast, right? So is there like a black magic? And of course, you guys are the pros with this, and you don't have to give away any industry secrets, but for people like me that don't have any knowledge of the algorithmic side of things when it comes to those AI things, is it like that we've got 20 different algorithms that all have slightly different purposes to choose from? Or is it basically two or three foundational ones that you basically pick as maybe like top three are the ones that are always the go-to?
Yeah, I mean, there's various best of breed kind of algorithmic ways that you can approach these things that go much, much more advanced than even a linear regression or anything like that. I'd rather not get into some of the secret sauce of some of the stuff that we've built up our own proprietary ones as well because of the context around the finance data as well as this non-financial data.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's going to be more and more to come there, but there is no just like magic panacea for use one of these three and it'll be, you know, always right. And that goes back into AI will not, you know, it will understand the historical data, but it actually will never know, what are the changes in the business that are going on in the future. It doesn't know what is your hiring plan. It doesn't know that, you know, Sally from this team is retiring and we need to go hire someone. Like there's always this like soft skill side that the human element will be needed, I think, in forecasting. And that's going to be very hard for AI to do beyond, you know, trending stuff out off of just, you know, if you have a very routine business and it's just plug and chug away, yes, you'll be able to use that. Yeah. On the other side, though, you know, we'll always need that human interpretation. And I think FP&A people who leverage AI tools and they can add in that element of that knowledge that they know, those are the people who are going to be most successful, and they'll feel like they have superpowers going into the upcoming years here.
And that's why we talk about augmentation, right? Yeah. Augmentation instead of replacement.
Absolutely.
And it seems so obvious when you talk about it there, but as you say, you know, coming back to the profit example, here's 2 years worth of historic data, you know, use this Python code that uses profit to generate the future forecast. But it doesn't know, as you say, what sequence of steps went into the total numbers that came out of that last 2 years worth of activity. And it also doesn't know what your ambitions are as a business. Yeah. So for example, you know, has the company now got VC backing, for example? You know, are we going to grow the team by, you know, 10 people? In which case that, you know, that graph's going to look a lot steeper, right?
You know, yeah, you're trying to build a J curve in your business. It's, you know, the AI might not know that that's about to occur.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then, and I keep stressing this when we talk about conversations, is it in the same way that, you know, ERP systems are used instead of Excel, or financial software is used instead of Excel, it's the same with AI. Yeah, I think the coming back to the whole dopamine piece, I think the attraction of AI as well is, you know, it's almost like you see creation happening as it speaks to you. You know, it's something very bizarre about it. But in fact, it's just regurgitating a ton of information that it's been trained on, right? But I think that's, you know, that's another trap, is that we think because we now have all of this power, you know, with all of these massive models, and, you know, ChatGPT can generate code and ChatGPT can do this, that we can now find solutions because we have AI to back us up, right? But it still doesn't take away from the variability, you know, and the narrow nature of some of the tools that finance teams do need to use, right? You know, so I guess short answer is, yeah, you can probably build a basic FP&A tool using AI, because I've done it, you know, using Notable. I know Glenn Hopper did it. But we're talking very basic, right? You know, so I think a dedicated tool at the right point is always going to be the right way to go. And it's likely that that tool's going to use AI anyway, you know, whether it's a historic algorithm like you're talking with some of the machine learning, or some of the good stuff that you guys are developing. It's just that decision point, isn't it? You know, when are we at the point where we don't need to use Excel and AI? And what is that point where we need an FP&A platform? You know, and as you say, it varies business to business, doesn't it?
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, it needs those common productized use cases before, you know, you could do it.
Okay, cool. So in terms of, and I know you don't want to give away any of the secret sauce, right? But you said that, you know, you're building some of your own knowledge into not just using sort of the standard algorithms and that sort of stuff, but from, I guess, from like a data Q&A perspective, you know, and all of that sort of stuff, is that where we're moving to with platforms like this? You know, so instead of having to, you know, click buttons and switch toggles and all that sort of stuff, are we moving towards a point where we can say, oh, you know, can you build this scenario and can you change this for me without us having to go in and get into the weeds? Or is that not a good way for a user to interact with the model?
You know, I think there's elements of it, because there's some AI is being used for interaction design, because now you're asking it to put in inputs on there. There's, and then you also mentioned QA. This is one where I think AI is great for, because if you do have a massive data set, I think it's great for anomaly detection and spotting out outliers out of the thing. And then what you do with those outliers, you know, you probably need a human to use judgment. Is this thing going to actually occur? Is that right? Is this a data cleansing exercise, or is this an okay one? I think that's a very quick win that we will see in a lot of finance and tools. And then the interface for building things, I've seen it being done in platforms already. And at some point there'll be I don't know if anyone will really do a speech interface for full model build. I dream of the day when I can say, Alexa, build me a blah, blah, blah model. Until then, I think people will have a day job for a while before that occurs.
Have you spoken to ChatGPT with your voice? Have you done that yet?
I use ChatGPT regularly. I have not tried a voice one yet, but I use it more for fun stuff and for, more than anything.
Yeah, funny. I love a fun use case, and it's a complete side tangent. I think I mentioned it with a podcast with Dan last week. There's a platform called character.ai. I don't know whether you've heard of it. So it's basically people training large language models to act as specific characters. So there's like a philosophy section where you can speak to Socrates, and I think there's some like anime and some like game characters that you can speak to and all of that sort of stuff. And it's a bit of fun, and all of that sort of stuff. But some people have done some funny ones. So somebody's like created a block of cheese that you can speak to. And it doesn't matter that it's a block of cheese or not. It's more the way that it responds, because it's kind of this like semi-depressed, kind of on edge, like panicky type cheese block. So you type it something, it comes back with some neurotic action, and it's got like action brackets that actually suggest that it's doing stuff, i.e. it's telling you the actions that it's making. It's very bizarre, but it's really, really funny. So I love a good fun use case. I don't know what you'd class as a fun use case.
Well, I would expect the cheese block to just tell you cheesy jokes.
It doesn't. It's neurotic. It's hilarious. Yeah. But no, what do you consider to be a fun use case?
So fun one, I asked ChatGPT to write me a story of Shrek and Donkey using financial modeling to solve an adventure. And somehow in the story involve a giraffe that joins them, and it nailed it. It did it so well. And after that, now I use it also for, I've got two small kids. Yep. So I will ask it to write me a bedtime story that's approximately 5 minutes long. And maybe it's got like, my kid's into dinosaurs right now, involve a dinosaur. Yep. And put in an underlying theme of something, cleaning your room or brushing your teeth. It nails it every night. And so I get all these like custom interesting stories for my kids through it.
Yeah. But it's interesting, isn't it? And this is where training's going to become more and more important, is we see the large language models nailing language because it is really good with the text and the books and all of that sort of stuff. It comes back to that whole predictive text argument. When people ask me to write a story, I've got lots of stories to take that knowledge from, not so much with the numbers until obviously the advanced data analysis came in, right? But no, it's a good shout. I've not used it with the kids yet. I'm trying to distance them from that stuff. I mean, they've got enough iPads and all of that sort of stuff. But what I wanted to mention, because I was talking about the speaking to it on the mobile app using the microphone, it's a bizarre experience because A, the voice that's speaking back is actually quite human. I mean, you can tell it's still AI, right? But it's definitely a step up from like your Alexa and your Google Home in terms of the way that it actually talks to you. But the reason that I find it bizarre is I've actually got some better responses speaking to ChatGPT with my voice than I have typing questions. Now, I don't know that's just because maybe I speak clearer than I type. I wouldn't think that was the case because I muddle my words a ton, right? Or something about it reading audio is, I don't know, consuming less tokens than type. I don't know. But the quality, the length, and the output of the response when I'm talking to it in voice seems to be just a whole lot better than text. So I thought I'd throw that in there because you should definitely give it a go.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's a lot of people tend to overthink when they're trying to write stuff.
Mm.
And when you talk, you just let it flow. And that's where things will just go more smoothly. Mm. And if you don't overthink that prompt, it should be able to let it flow back to you.
Mm. I mean, it was a personal use case. I was comparing energy suppliers. You know, I don't know how it is in the US, but here in the UK, I mean, energy prices have just been ridiculous, right? And today there's been no point in switching because it's no better with one supplier over another, but maybe it's around time this year. So essentially I spoke to it and I said, I want you to search the internet, you know, and come back with real feedback on which platforms people are recommending the highest. Because I didn't want to get into that territory of, you know, searching to all of the different sites and then being bombarded with all the marketing and all of that sort of stuff. So it worked really well. There are some times where you would prefer to do a Google search. Like, for example, if you want a recipe and you want to see photos and you want to see the step-by-step, you know, that's not a good use case. But yeah, anyway, we've gone on a bit of a tangent, haven't we?
Yeah.
But the last thing before I forget, coming back to what we're talking about with data Q&A and what you said about, you know, speaking to an AI and have it produce a model for you, I'd also be a bit skeptical about jumping too early into the text to automation type stuff. So when you look at the automation platforms, you've got your Zapier's, and you've even got, I think, Power Automate Copilot in the Microsoft space now. You can chat to it and say, I want to create a workflow for this. Now, if it's simple, 9 times out of 10, it'll get the components right for you. You can just link them up and tweak the settings. But again, going past that, you might end up spending more time trying to ask it the right question to create the automation than if you've just done it from scratch. So, you know, pick your battles is what I'm saying there.
Yeah, I see that all the time. You need to chunk it out into these smaller prompts, and then it still needs a human to go piece it all together as the master architect.
Yeah. Absolutely. And have you, because Copilot was only really released yesterday or the day before yesterday for Office. Have you managed to delve into that yet? Have you seen any of it?
I've just seen the marketing stuff yet, but I haven't gotten my hands on it. So I'm excited to try it out a little bit here soon.
Yeah, give it a go. But again, to anybody that's listening, don't get too deep into it yet. The feedback that I'm seeing already is it's really good, you know, especially having ChatGPT in Word, you know, because of course, you know, producing text is really good. Anybody who thinks that having Copilot in Excel to build models and query data is not going to happen yet, right? You know, the immediate feedback is coming back saying, yeah, it's great as an assistant. You know, you can query this and you can do that and the other, but it's not game changing. Some people have really taken advantage of the PowerPoint stuff though. You know, so for example, if I've got a document and I just want that information to translate into slides, that's a really good use case. Obviously the formatting is off because you've got to make sure it's on brand and all of that sort of stuff. But I think that's where some of the real use cases for Copilot are. It's the translation of documentation into different formats. I think if they think it's going to be a ChatGPT killer, you know, especially if you're using the paid version of ChatGPT, you might be a bit disappointed. But yeah, definitely check it out because it's just going to ramp up that productivity, right? The speed that we're going to be able to do stuff is just going to, it's going to go nuts.
Yeah, and it goes into that financial storytelling part that we talked about, and, you know, being able to prepare those outputs for folks there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I have seen some platforms and they're probably, you know, in the millions of dollars, right? But they are getting to the point badly now of being able to take a dashboard and then automatically translate that into slides without you needing to do anything, you know, and it's a cool concept. I know Jamie Lee, I don't know whether you know Jamie Lee Salazar at Cobbler, she was doing some pretty funky stuff with translating data into presentations. So we're getting there, but you still need the human to tell the story, right? Cool. Well, we're coming up to time, Matt. It's been great to have you on. So I'm going to ask you the question that I try and ask as many people as I can, and there's no right or wrong answer. And then you can tell people where to find out more about you. So the question I always ask is, it's a podcast about tech. So either in your professional or personal life, have you got an app on your phone, a Google Chrome extension, you know, a piece of software that you could not live without? It's like literally the go-to bit of tech that you use.
I mean, plenty. So Do I got to pick just one right now?
Well, you can. I'll let you do two.
I just tried this app called Superpower that plugs into your calendar and your Zoom, and it summarizes all your meeting notes and action items. It's pretty awesome on that side. That one's really great. Instead of having like the little Word doc on the side, typing in my notes and all my meetings and figuring out what did we promise to go do later. Yeah. And I think that one is great. The other big one for me, I've been on a big health and fitness kick over the last year. I fully transformed my life, lost like 40 pounds, did, you know, a ton on the health side. So I'm really into that quantified self side, and I'm using a ton of different apps and tools for that too.
And is that like Fitbit activity trackers or?
What I love is Google Fit has now created a lot of integrations. They have this health sync that will connect to all of your apps. So now Google Fit is my like master dashboard of everything. It connects my Eat Sleep mattress. It connects my Fitbit. I've got the Google Watch. I've got a smart scale. And now I get that whole picture all in one on that. And I think having that on a regular basis and tracking my progress over time, that's just been transformational for me.
And that's where dopamine works in our favor, right? If we can see progress, then we want to commit to more progress, right? And I saw the post you did. And I think, was it you said it would basically cut out sugar, bread, and something else for 6 days a week? Is that the gist?
Yeah, so I cut out sugar, bread, alcohol, 6 days a week. One day a week, I can be a trash compactor and have whatever I want. And then the other part of it is I try to get on. I really love an exercise bike. I go for 20 minutes minimum at least three times a week. And my secret is I get on the bike, I set it at max resistance, and I pretend like someone is chasing me with a syringe full of poison. At the end of that 20 minutes, you're so gassed, but you got your first win for the day. You got your workout done, and zero calorie counting, and it worked. And it worked for, you know, many of my friends. And we actually did a challenge over at Giraffe with several of our coworkers as well, who had life-changing results basically doing that.
Amazing. Yeah. And it comes back to it, you know, and it's a quote that I've used a ton of times, but, you know, a healthy person wants 1,000 things, an unhealthy person just wants one, right? You know, and it's built on everything, right? You know,
yeah.
Health, family, business, you know, it's important to get the hierarchy right. And you seem to be nailing it. And I'm impressed with two kids. I mean, mine are 3 and 18 months. And I'd be lying if I said I got the right amount of exercise in.
Yeah, I've started using my little guy. He's a toddler, so now I've started bench pressing him for fun sometimes as well. That adds a few reps in during the day.
Yeah, I've got some heavy duty resistance bands. I mean, shameless plug. It's an X3 bar. I think it's John J. Quish, who's like an engineer by trade or something like that. But basically he determined that heavy duty resistance bands are the best way to get the most resistance without doing damage to your joints or something like that. And anyway, I got it over COVID because I didn't want to go to the gym with a mask on, and I started doing it at home. But like you say, it's an opportunity for the kids to get involved, because if they see you, like, you know, doing your resistance squats or whatever it happens to be, either they'll hang on the bar or hang on the elastic band to increase the resistance for you, or they copy you. And it's fascinating. I mean, Roman, he's only 18 months old, but I started working out the other day and he picked up a band and he started emulating me, you know. And I think that's a skill or an ethos that can't be taught early enough, is base health and fitness principles. So if they see you doing something, they'll copy it. And, you know, it's good for everyone, right?
Yeah, I've got my kids copying me too on that. And they'll join me to go do a couple of jumping jacks or some air squats in the living room here and there. And creating those healthy habits are great.
Yeah, very good. Cool. Well, I've kept you too long, Martin. So where can people find you? Where can I find more about Giraffe?
Yeah, so check out giraffe.com, J-I-R-A-V. I'm very bad at spelling, but I hope you can remember it. And also you can always drop me an email at martin@giraffe.com. Check me out on Twitter at Martin Zych, so MartinZych. Yeah. And happy to chat more with you guys about FP&A, tech, giraffes, health, fitness, anything you want.
And you're on LinkedIn too as well, right? Yeah, perfect. All right, I'll put the links in the show notes. But Martin, absolute pleasure. Thanks ever so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.